Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week, we're delving into the latest UBS Investor Watch report, the latest in the quarterly series of publications that analyses investor sentiment and behaviour. This most recent iteration, For Love Not Money, explores collecting and seeks to explain how and why many wealthy investors build their collections and why pure profit seldom plays a role in that process. In a week that saw an all-time record paid for a work of art at auction as Leonardo's Salvator Mundi sold for $450 million, it's a fine time indeed to reflect on both the nature and impact of investing in collections, whether of art, of automobiles, coins, stamps, or whatever else. Let's start with Samir Arora, UBS Head of Client Strategy, Wealth Management Americas in New York. The team there authors and publishes InvestorWatch on a quarterly basis on topics that are relevant to affluent consumers and investors. Samir, can you give us a bit of an overview, I guess, first of all? How does the UBS InvestorWatch fit into the ecosystem of the bank, and what are its main objectives?
The InvestorWatch is a quarterly research publication where every 90 days we go out into the marketplace and we conduct research with about 2,500 high net worth consumers, and we tap into a topic that is highly relevant and important to them as they think about their broader life and their financial life. And these are topics that go well beyond investing. They go beyond stocks and bonds and really focus in on larger issues that are highly relevant and, again, that are highly important to consumers and investors out in the marketplace. And so we do this every 90 days. We've been doing this for about 5 years now. Started in the United States, and now it's a global research publication around the world.
Michael Crook is an executive director and head of portfolio and planning in Wealth Management Research, where he advises investors on global investment strategy, asset allocation, and portfolio construction. Michael, let me ask you, what's the big picture here? Sum up this notion, it's in the subheading, of course, of passion, not profit, which is behind the For Love, Not Money piece.
I think the big picture is that a lot of wealthy families, they have passions, and so they have collectibles. They like to collect things, whether it's art or coins, maybe cars, but they do it because they enjoy it, not because they necessarily view it as an investment. And the challenging part of that is it's not always true that their children see those collectibles in the same way. And so without that passion, a lot of times it's difficult for the children to want to hold on to the collectibles, except for when they feel a sense of obligation.
Dave Liebel is UBS Senior Wealth Strategist. And Dave, if we can ask you to focus in particular on the planning portion, I guess. There are some really compelling themes here around legacy and inheritance. How complex is this issue, and what does the report tell us about that?
There's all sorts of different types of collectors and all different types of collections. But, the collectors tend to be passionate about what they do. The kids sometimes have no interest in it. And sometimes they even have negative feelings towards it because of the fact that the art collecting took the parents away or one parent away from giving the children attention. So many times it gets sold, and not always for fair prices because the kids aren't that educated in the art and the art market.
On this theme then of inheritance, wealth transfer, and so on, we've talked before on the program about an unprecedented transfer of wealth, for instance, from boomers to millennials. And this is a critical issue here too, isn't it? Samir Arora.
As you can imagine, financial instruments such as stocks and bonds are a lot easier to transfer. They have very clear monetary value. You can sell them, buy them, liquidate them. You can track their pricing on a day-to-day basis. With collecting, as you know, it's much more opaque and it's not transparent. And it's much harder to monetize or liquidate parts of a collection if you needed to raise cash or if you wanted to change your asset allocation. And, interestingly, 4 in 5 collectors plan to pass their collections on to their heirs rather than selling them. But really, most have not taken steps to educate their heirs on how to manage, appraise, or sell the collection even going forward. And then if you look at heirs who've inherited collections, only 35% were actually interested in the collection. So a majority are not even interested in the collection that they're inheriting, although they do feel a sense of obligation and responsibility to honor the wishes of the benefactor and hold on to the collection. But like you pointed out, I think they tend to do it begrudgingly.
Generations then may not be aligned in terms of how they value these things. So how complex does managing a legacy, indeed the potential inheritance of a collection, become? Michael Crook, if I can ask you that.
It has an impact on the legacy because the matriarch or the patriarch of the family that created the collection, they might view that as a very powerful legacy, but their children don't. And it's something that families need to think about together. Just one issue that they might run into is that if the children don't have an interest in that collection, say it's art, for instance, and the children don't have an interest, it could be that the parents themselves would be better off, that the people who created the collection, figuring out what to do with it before they pass away. Maybe they're going to donate it to a museum or even find some way to sell the collection, because once it moves to that next generation, they're not going to have the passion and they're not going to be able to liquidate it as effectively. I think we've seen that over and over again, where you really need that expertise in the collection to know how to best value it and best liquidate it. But a lot of times the kids don't have that expertise.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at some of the most arresting statistics and figures from the report's findings. Samir Arora, if we can come back to you, there are certainly some arresting stats in there. Almost half haven't insured their collection. Over half have never had it appraised at all. And two-thirds, this really struck me, have never discussed their collection with their financial advisor. I mean, is this also one of the important learnings, I suppose, for you and your colleagues, which is to make sure that people do integrate this into, particularly when it comes to things like planning for the future, legacy and estate planning and so on?
Yes, we think, again, very correctly, what you just summarized was a key finding or a key revelation for us, which is if 2 in 3 are never discussing their collection with their advisor, that implies and that means that they're not viewing their collection as part of their total financial holdings, because they're not including it in conversations that they're having with their advisor on planning, on thinking about their total financial life, and how they might want to pass that on to the next generation, even when it comes to planning around their legacy, what they want to leave behind, what they want to give away, what they want to transition. And we think there's a real opportunity here. Again, we don't expect our advisors to overnight become experts in wine collecting or watches or cars or what have you. That would not be fair or reasonable, but we think there's a real opportunity for financial advisors, wherever they are, whatever markets they're sitting in, to be aware of and to engage with clients on their collecting habits. Again, not at a detailed minutia level when it comes to buying watches or particular labels of wine, but certainly being aware of how much a client is spending on their collecting, what do they need from their annual liquidity to maintain their passion around collecting, how is the collection managed and stored and cataloged and appraised, and very importantly, how is it insured? Is the collection insured? Does the insurance reflect the true market value? And finally, and not least, I would say, is also facilitating the conversation with the next generation or with heirs, because we also found the disconnect between what collectors plan to do with their collections and heirs on the receiving end of that equation, how they're viewing receiving the collection as well.
And Dave Libel, if we're talking about the relative fluidity of all of these collectibles in terms of valuations, is there a problem here with, I don't know, inefficiency in the marketplace?
People have collected over time, and what they think may be a treasure because of maybe their lack of an eye or because of restoration work done to it may actually not have anywhere near the value that they thought. In fact, in some circumstances, it could be a fake. So getting a qualified appraisal of the collection, whatever you're planning to do, whether it's selling it, you need to do it if you're gifting it in the United States just for tax purposes, or if you're gifting it to family or to a charity, you need to get a qualified appraisal. And then at death, you have to get a qualified appraisal to value it for estate tax purposes. But a qualified appraisal will go a long way in kind of giving you an indication, if it's done properly, of what the values, the range of values are for the individual artworks in the collection.
Next up, let's talk a little, Michael Crook, with you, about how emotional a play this is.
We often talk about building, I don't know, diversified portfolios and the need to be objective and to think about things in a cool-headed way and talk to your advisors and so on. But interesting, people are very explicit about how emotions rule often in these cases. Is that tricky for you and your colleagues? Because it's rather different to how people usually make decisions, right?
We talk about being rational and unemotional, but I don't know that it's different than how everyone usually makes decisions. I think that even on the investment side, you know, a lot of decision-making is emotional. It's probably more emotional. I mean, we're talking about passion, so of course it's emotional. It's not a bad thing with collectibles. These are collections that individuals or families have taken sometimes decades to put together. And so it's not just collecting things for them. It's an experience, and that's why there's an emotional attachment to it. So I think it's maybe a little different, but that's part of one of the reasons that people work hard and save money so that they can pursue their passions. And it just, because collectibles can end up having a lot of value, we have to also think about them in the context of the overall wealth management plan.
Now, passion over profit is the subhead of this Investor Watch piece. On this question of how emotional a play this is, to you, Dave Liebel, how do you and your colleagues make sense of those dynamics?
With emotion come the ability to make significant errors. Passion is great, but it has to be tempered by reason. The whole 18th century England, right? Passion was bad, reason was good. You really need to be rational about all these decisions, whether you're the collector or whether you are the people trying to deal with the collection after the collector's death. So passion does get in the way, but passion also allows people to really become experts in the field. If you have passion about something, then you want to spend time on it. You want to learn about it. You want to master it. So the passion is superb in terms of helping to make you an expert if it is tempered with reason, study, and access to experts who can help you wind your way around the dark world, which is, as I said, a relatively Byzantine insider place.
So an emotional play, maybe. How much of a challenge is that for you? Samir, Aurora, I'll put it to you, for you and your colleagues.
I think at the end of the day, when you're in the business of building deep relationships with clients, I think it's very important that as a trusted wealth advisor, that you understand clients holistically and completely, so which means understanding their rational needs and their economic and financial goals over time, but then also understanding their emotional makeup and understanding what are the values that clients inherit, let's say, from their parents that they want to pass down to the next generation, for example. And I think viewing collecting within that context becomes really important, because what you're really trying to do is understand your client in their complete makeup, not just looking at their short-term or medium-term specific financial goals like buying a house or starting a business or funding the next purchase that might require a significant payment, but really also understanding holistically what makes my client tick, what are their passions, what is it that really drives them. And I think once you do that, you really start to develop a much broader and deeper understanding of your client, and we think over time that leads to a much better client-advisor relationship in the long run.
And a final thought on the program from you, Dave Liebel. Perhaps you can pick up on that theme that Samir raised there and speak to what UBS can offer to people, whether collectors or potential inheritors or estate planners in this space. How does the bank work here?
If the person is starting to collect, or it's a family member after the death of a collector trying to deal with the collection, UBS, the financial advisor, can be an excellent place to start by being able to, through the resources of UBS, identify the best appraisers, the best art advisory specialists, reputable galleries and auction houses to deal with. So there is a major role for the UBS advisor in terms of using the collective wisdom of the institution to point clients in the right direction, so they do not have the kind of remorse a lot of early stage collectors have in terms of the mistakes they made early on. Or family members who have to sell a collector's collection at death, realizing they may have been taken advantage of. So the financial advisor and the collective wisdom of the specialists at UBS can help mitigate those circumstances.
And that's Dave Liebel, bringing us to the end of this 163rd edition of the Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week on Monocle 24. If this has piqued your interest, be sure to look and listen out for something of a companion piece when UBS publishes a Miami edition of the report during Art Basel Miami Beach. In the meantime, listen again and find out more at monocle.com or head for ubs.com. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.